This interview was recorded for the International Bomber Command Center Digital Archive, which owns the copyright for this performance.
Okay, so following on from our first session last week, Jimmy has some further recollections he would like to add. So we're going to try and capture these over a speakerphone, which is the first time I've tried this method, so we'll see how it goes. I understand, Jimmy, that you want to tell us more about your role as a medical officer at RAF Wardington. So over to you.
Yes, well, maybe I give you the impression that I did nothing but sit in my office and occasionally see patients. I also had to do inspections of the catering establishment and sanitation establishments in the, around RAF Wardington. So that meant a long walk sometime round about the station. And that added to the interest, really, to make sure everything was clean and there were no dangers in food infections or anything like that. Also, one of the things I had to do was to inspect the small holding unit at RAF Winfleet on the coast, which was the bombing station for the Wardington. And I used to go there probably twice a month. I flew over the top with it with some of the bomber boys, but I also had to inspect that and make sure everything was all right there and they were all fit and healthy. The other thing that was of interest, which I forgot, was once the wing commander and I were sent down to Tangmere. The reason for that being that one of the aircraft coming back from the Middle East, I think it was from Shalufa, was not coming over France. They hit a bit of a storm and we had to climb up over the clouds. And of course, everybody was on oxygen then. And when they were coming down to reasonable level and had to take their oxygen masks off, we found that they were carrying a few of the ground crew with them coming back. And they found that one of the lads was unconscious. So they put out a Mayday, and they were ordered into Tangmere. So they landed at Tangmere, and the medical officer there certified that the chap was dead. So the wing commander and I went down there, were ordered down there to find out exactly what had happened. So we had to interview the medical officer there, and there seemed to be some question as to whether the chap had died on the aircraft or died on after he was on the ground. But we ascertained really that he'd either taken his mask off or it had slipped off and nobody had noticed, and that's how he died on that. But we interviewed the medical officer, and he assured us that when he saw the chap, he was dead, and that was it. But somebody had complained about the smell of the oxygen, which is the funny thing. And so the wing commander ordered a cylinder to be put in his car, and we went up to Farnborough and left it at Farnborough for inspection. Funny thing was, when we got near to Farnborough, he said, do you have any form of identification on you? I said, no, I handed mine into headquarters to be checked. He said, I did the same. So he said, we've got no form of identification. We've got a great big cylinder in the back of the car. And he said, no identification to get out of the station. Oh, he said, anyway, he said, I was stationed here at one time. And so he just bluffed his way past everybody. And we got there and got her down to the medical centre there. So we then had a nice walk around the station at RAF. And we saw this hangar, and there was a twin-tailed aircraft there. Neither of us had seen an aircraft like that before. We didn't know what it was or anything, but it just was in the hangar, and there was no guards or anybody around about it, so we couldn't ask many questions. Anyway, we left there and got back to Warrington. So that was the only one. The other thing, I have a vague recollection. I've been trying to find out more about it, but I do remember being in an aircraft and looking out for the bit of standing between the flight engineer and the pilot, and looking out the window, I could see another plane, a bomber, quite close to us. And he said, oh yes, we reckon there's about 100 aircraft today. We're flying down to Farnborough. And I haven't been able to find anything at all about them. We flew down to Farnborough back again. They said there was about 100 aircraft in that flight. So, anyway, that was that.
So what year was that, Jimmy?
That would be 46.
Okay. So you didn't know what the aircraft was you actually saw at Farnborough, the twin-tailed aircraft?
No, we never found out what it was.
You never found out, okay.
No.
Can I take you back to one of your earlier statements? You said you had to sort of inspect Waddington occasionally for sanitation.
Yes.
Obviously that takes two forms. One is food security in the mess blocks. Did the catering staff ever give you any trouble or worry about what
no.
you were going to find?
I never found any trouble at all. Everything was perfectly clean, and the cookie looked all right to me. Nobody made any complaint about the food or anything at all. And I can't remember any attacks of illness coming from the food or that. So.
Okay. And did your inspections also cover toilet blocks and showers and things like that?
Yes. Just had a look in just to make sure everything was clean and that. Nobody questioned me at all about going. I just, the flight sergeant and I just went round, and that was it. So.
Okay. So at Wainfleet on the bombing range, just was there a permanent staff there? How big was the permanent staff at Wainfleet?
I think there were only three of them there.
Okay, so very, very small.
Very small, yes.
Complement and buildings to look at.
That's all.
Okay. So anything further you've remembered or want to add to the recollections you've just added?
No, I can't think of anything else.
Okay, well, that's
racking my brain to see if I can think of something. I'm trying to make sure that it's actually happened and not just sort of fiction of my imagination.
Okay, well, that's very useful addition to the session we had last week. I much appreciate the extra thought went in behind this, and it gives an extra dimension to your role as medical officer.
Yes, so that was that.
Okay, well, thanks again, Jimmy, we'll be in touch, and we'll finish the interview again now then, shall we?
Yeah, well, let me shut off your machine. I'll tell you, I was down at the Bomber Command Memorial on Sunday. It was memorial service.
Oh, right.
I met some veterans down there, what, about 20 of us that were veterans. And,
this was Armed Forces Day, was it? This is the memorial.
Yes, it was Armed Forces Day. We all had to lay a wreath.
So this was at Green Park, was it?
That's right.
Okay.
And Air Chief Marshal was there, and spoke to all of us. Came around, personally spoke to all of us. He and his wife, absolutely charming. Couldn't have been ready. But I was talking to a chap, and something was mentioned, and he said, "Oh yes," he said, "I was with 57 Squadron," and he said, "A lot of us transferred to 617. Now, that was 43, and he had a DFC, and next, before his DFC, he had a ribbon, which was a only ribbon. I didn't get a chance to ask him what that ribbon was. He had that in front of the DFC. Would that be for a part of the DFC, or was it a separate ribbon? I don't know, because just when we were sitting talking, they came and said, right, we're getting taxis to take us to down to the memorial. We were in the club, the RAF club in Piccadilly, and he was taken away, so I didn't get a chance to ask him, and I just don't know what that ribbon was.
And you didn't manage to catch his name at all?
No.
Okay.
That's the trouble. That if he was DFC and transferred to that, some of the 57 Squadron did transfer to 617. And I don't think he could have taken part in the raid, actually. Did Ellis?
No, there's only Johnny Johnson left, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
He was on the Tirpitz or something like that.
He may have joined later from 57 during the war.
Aye. So I didn't get his name, so I couldn't do it. But I'll try to find out, because we're going up to Coningsby a week on Monday to have afternoon tea at the Battle of Britain place.
That'll be good.
There's something on there, I don't know.
Something to look forward to. Excellent.
I met another chap, and I mentioned him. I said I had my 100th birthday a month ago, and he just looked at me and said, "I had mine in January." He said, "I'm older than you." That was something. So he said he was shot down on a raid to Stuttgart on the 22nd of May 1944. He parachuted out and was taken prisoner. And said he was in a camp south of Berlin. And he said when the Russians advanced, he decided to escape from the camp and made his way across through Germany and through France and got to the coast. And he said Navy were very kind. They ferried him across to Britain. So he was quite an amusing little chap. That was a very interesting day we had there.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. Well, I must say the RAF would be absolutely first class. But every time I've been down, you know. The Air Chief Marshal, when he was making his speech afterwards, referred to the doctor here today, so pointed to me, so that brought me into all the rest were all sitting around with their medals. So But he's very kind. I had a long chat with him, and his wife came and sat with me and had a long chat as well. So
good. You were personally mentioned. Excellent.
Oh yeah, it made my day.
I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. Yeah.
Okay,
then, okay, Jimmy. Well, it's been a pleasure catching up with you and the additional stories. And we'll add this to the interview now, and I'll send it off to Lincoln and see what they do with it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks, Nigel.
Okay then.
Nice speaking to you, and thank you very much.
Well, I've enjoyed it, Jimmy. Thank you very much for your time and your recollections, and of course your service.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you.
Okay, then.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye, Matt.
Bye-bye, Jimmy. Bye-bye. Bye.